the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken urged Hamas to accept a ceasefire in Cairo Monday, part of a growing international pressure to bring an end to the eight-month-old conflict with Israel. VOA's Catherine Shipson has more in efforts to end those tensions.
The United Nations Security Council overwhelmingly passed a resolution Monday endorsing the ceasefire plan. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
Palestinian civilians are living through sheer hell through no fault of their own. And the humanitarian situation in Gaza has gotten worse and worse and worse.
The ceasefire deal outlined by the United States 10 days ago would allow for the release of the remaining 120 Israeli hostages in captivity. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
Reuters' Angela Johnson tells us more about the UN resolution adopted and Hamas's response.
Monday's resolution welcomes that proposal, says Israel has accepted the deal, and calls on Hamas to agree to it.
Will those in favor of the draft resolution please raise their hand?
14 Security Council members voted in favor.
Abstentions?
Russia abstained. Its ambassador asked what Israel had specifically agreed to. Hamas welcomed the adoption of the U.S.-drafted resolution. In a statement, the militant group said it's ready to cooperate with mediators over implementing the plan's principles.
That's Reuters' Angela Johnson reporting. The U.S. military said Monday that it plans to stockpile aid shipments on a secure beach in Gaza during a U.N. pause on distributing food from the American-built pier after one of the deadliest days of the Israel-Hamas war. The U.N. World Food Program, which works with U.S. officials to transfer desperately needed aid from the month-old pier to warehouses and local relief teams in Gaza, tweeted Monday that the U.N. would conduct a security review to assess. This is VOA News. A snap election called by the president, French President Emmanuel Macron, after Sunday's bruising loss to Marine Le Pen's national rally in EU elections, is a risky move that opens the possibility of the extreme right. The move was a shock, said Anne Muxel, the executive director of Sciences Po's Center of Political Sciences, adding that it left the country in an uncertain situation.
It's a play at risks because it opens the possibility that the extreme right arrives for the first time at the government. It opens the eventuality to have a cohabitation in France.
If the Eurosceptic anti-immigration national rally did score a majority, Macron would remain president for three more years. South Korea's military says it is detecting signs that North Korea is installing its own loudspeakers along their border. This is a day after the South blared anti-Pyongyang propaganda broadcast over its speakers. South Korea's broadcast on Sunday was in retaliation for the North sending over 1,000 balloons filled with trash and manure over the last couple of weeks. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports a jury is now deliberating in the Hunter Biden federal gun case.
Jurors in Delaware have started deliberating whether the president's son is guilty of charges over a revolver he bought 6 years ago when prosecutors say he was addicted to crack. They claim he lied on a federal forum that he was not illegally using or addicted to drugs. In closing arguments, a prosecutor told jurors to focus on the overwhelming evidence against Hunter Biden and disregard the gallery, which included First Lady Jill Biden. Hunter Biden's lawyers have tried to show he did not consider himself an addict when he filled out the form. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Doctors Without Borders says the notorious Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group fighting Sudan's military for over a year fired shots and looted a main hospital in the western region of Darfur, forcing its closure. The RSF attacked the South Hospital in Al-Fashir, the capital city at North Darfur province, on Sunday, opening fire on medical staff and patients, the aid group said in a statement. Most patients in the medical team managed to flee the shooting. It was not immediately clear if there were casualties. This came as the RSF intensified its offensive. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's president addresses the nation on his missing vice president's plane.
I know that we are all frightened and concerned, but I want to assure you that I am sparing no available resource to find that plane, and I am holding on to every fiber of hope that we will find survivors.
Uganda's main opposition National Unity Platform Party establishes an opposition leadership school. Liberians react to the jailing of former President Weah's religious advisor. A former Malawi VP makes a pitch for the presidency. South Africa's Umkhonto we Sizwe or MK party petitions the High Court to stop this Friday's sitting of parliament.
Umkhonto we Sizwe has raised a concern about the irregularities that emerge from the elections. And they are saying they are not going to allow their members to attend.
And former President Trump returns to the campaign trail after guilty verdicts. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera says he has asked the neighboring countries and development partners to help search for the missing military aircraft carrying the vice president and nine other people on Monday morning. In his first national address Monday evening, Chakwera said he had ordered the military to continue searching for the aircraft all night until it is found. Lamek Masina reports from Lilongwe.
Chakwera said the countries that have so far offered to assist in the search included the United States, Britain, Norway, and Israel,
who have all offered support in different forms, including the use of specialized technologies that will enhance our capacity to find the plane sooner. And I am most grateful for this support.
Chakwera also dismissed some media reports that his government has suspended search operations until Tuesday.
This is false. MDF soldiers are still on the ground carrying out the search, and I have given strict orders that the operation should continue until the plane is found.
A military plane carrying Chirima and nine others went missing Monday morning after it failed to make its scheduled landing at Nzuzu International Airport in northern Malawi. He was on his way to attend a funeral of the country's former cabinet minister, Ralph Kasambara. President Lazarus Chakwera said aviation authorities had lost contact with the plane due to poor visibility caused by bad weather. However, Chakwera says he has great hope that the plane will soon be located.
I know that this is a heartbreaking situation. I know that we are all frightened and concerned. I, too, am concerned. But I want to assure you that I am sparing no available resource to find that plane. And I am holding on to every fiber of hope that we will find survivors.
Chakwera has so far directed the military to provide Malawians with regular updates on how the operation is going. The incident comes at a time when the relationship between the Malawi president and his vice was starting to normalize as the two were seen together during public functions. Last month, the Malawi government dropped corruption charges against Chirima over accusations that he received kickbacks from businessmen in exchange for government contracts. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Lilongwe.
If all goes according to the Constitution, South Africa's newly elected members of parliament will most likely be sworn in this Friday, June 14, and in turn elect the next president. But the South Africa Mail and Guardian reports on Monday that the Umkhonto we Sizwe or MK party has directed its lawyers to petition the Constitutional Court to stop the parliament from sitting. The party says it wants to challenge the results of the May 29th election for possible fraud. Professor Sipho Sipe is a political analyst and the former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He tells me the Constitutional Court is likely to dismiss the MK party's petition for, in his view, trying to hold the country to ransom.
Umkhonto we Sizwe has raised a concern about the irregularities that emerged from the elections, where some votes disappeared and it felt that it has been robbed. And it's not the only party that has done so. There are about 20 parties that had raised that concern. And it is of the view that those issues should have been resolved first before the IEC could pronounce on the fairness of the elections. But the IEC decided to go ahead and also claimed that it has resolved some of those objections and concerns. And there have been about 500 complaints, which is a large number, and the first time that we had such a large number of complaints by parties. So that is their concern. And they are saying they are not going to allow their members to attend. And they are of the view that should the members not sit, then the National Assembly would not have been properly constituted, and therefore it cannot sit to elect the president. But the challenge that they have, it's all around interpretation, because the Constitution talks about a minimum of 350 members.
Let's assume the MK party does not go in on the 14th on Friday during the sitting. Constitutionally or legally, what does that mean?
No, it does not mean anything. There will still be members. They will be sworn in at the time when they choose to go back to the National Assembly. They will seek clarity from the Constitutional Court, which would convene and dispense with the matter before Friday, because it's simply explaining one or two clauses and just listening to the argument. And that will not take long for the Constitutional Court to conclude that. My sense is that given the orientation of the Constitutional Court judges, they are going to dismiss the submission by Umkhonto Sizwe, because they will be saying, here's a party that is trying to hold the country to ransom. So I think Umkhonto Sizwe goes there not in a friendly terrain.
We know there is a process underway for a coalition government. What do you know is happening behind doors?
Well, at the moment, you've had the parties that were invited, the so-called black parties or the parties on the left. Those parties have said that they will not serve with the Democratic Alliance. And the Democratic Alliance, on the other hand, says it does not serve with them. But given that these black parties have made that pronouncement, they actually exclude themselves from working with the ANC. So it is possible that the ANC that is led by Ramaphosa might tend to veer towards the Democratic Alliance, because Ramaphosa himself is somebody who supported heavily by business, and the business is calling for that type of coalition. Although on the ground, there is a view that says black parties must be able to get together so that they can change whatever needs to be changed in the Constitution. Because as matters stand, the black condition has not changed that materially for a majority of African people.
Professor Sipho Sipe is a political analyst and the former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg. Uganda's main opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP party, says it has established an opposition leadership school in the country. This will be the first of its kind in Uganda. Party leader Rabo Chakulayi, also known as Bobby Wine, says the school will teach various political and socio-economic subjects to party members and other interested Ugandans. He tells me the more the citizens are educated about the political process, the more they can contribute to the development.
Thank you very much, James. We recognize that in Uganda there's a deficit of leadership. The military dictatorship that took over the country 38 years ago made sure that they destroy any kind of civic engagement. Political education was abolished in schools, and even the history of Uganda has now been altered. So we saw it imperative for us to establish a leadership school where we can prepare leaders and empower them with the knowledge and appreciation of the dynamics that have shaped the political history of Uganda.
So what will you be teaching?
Well, we are going to be teaching leadership skills, communication skills, policy, and all that. But most importantly, we want to simplify what we learned in higher institutions of learning for the common people. Majority of our people are ghetto people. They lack the formal education, but they appreciate the leadership deficit in their country. We want to transform the education that we got from universities as big as Harvard to a normal layperson's understanding, an ordinary human understanding.
Honorable, do you think the topic of corruption will be one of the subjects?
Definitely, definitely. Corruption has been a cancer that has ravaged our country, and we have to teach our people about it, how to resist it. First of all, we want to open their minds to the extent that corruption can damage a country, but also to empower them with alternative ideas to fight corruption.
You say you need leaders who will resist the temptation of power. What does that mean?
Well, power corrupts, and since power corrupts, we are also, you know, prone to corruption since we are seeking power. Although we are seeking power to transform a country, we need to prepare ourselves to be able to resist the trappings and temptations of power.
Human rights also.
Most definitely. We want to teach people about their constitutional rights, but also civic duties, so that it's a double benefit for our country.
When do you think the school is going to come into existence?
The school is in existence right now.
That was Ugandan opposition leader Robert Chakulayi, also known as Bobby Wine. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 11th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Malawi's former vice president is calling on prospective voters to choose him as president in next year's general election. Kassim Chilumpa says he is best placed to resolve the challenges facing the country. He made the statement during a meeting in the southern city of Zumba, where the former vice president called on voters to have confidence in him. For analysis on the former vice president's electoral prospects, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Malawian political analyst Ernest Lamek Tindwa.
What we have seen lately is the parties really activating their processes in terms of campaigning. Of course, the official campaign period has not been declared by the Malawi Electoral Commission, but parties, as they tend towards elections, as they tend to activate their activities, campaigning become a key feature as we tend towards elections. So this is not surprising. Really, recently, you have seen a number of parties really traversing across the country, trying to woo voters as early as it is. We are voting next year, August or May, in the general elections, where we'll be electing councillors, members of parliament, and the president. So I think parties have started to reposition themselves and trying to woo voters.
In Zumba, where he held a political activity, he told Malawians to have trust in him and that he has extensive experience in governing the country. What has been the reaction or response from Malawians so far?
If you look at discussions on social media, certainly the picture doesn't look good for former Vice President Kassim Chilumpa. One, he looks old. and flair, and his podium or output on the podium really was not convincing. So the reaction, taking it from social media, has not been favorable to Kassim Chilumba. For the reason I've given, he looks quite old and frail, and I think the message was not convincing to Malawians. Really, Malawians did not see anything new. The period he was in government as the vice president is not a period where Malawians can look back and say there was something they might have benefited. Certainly, it's one period which Malawi consider as a lost decade, in my view, and therefore the experience drawn from that period is not something you'd want to put to voters, really, because if there is a period where Malawians have regretted, it's the period soon after the one-party era when we ushered in the UDF. And much of the social problems Malawians are experiencing today are being attributed to the regime that came in when we ushered in a multi-party democracy.
Malawian political analyst Ernest Lamek Etindua was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. Liberian authorities last week jailed former President George Weah's religious advisor after he failed to secure a bond for stealing thousands of dollars from 90 other Liberians. Denise Nipsen has details from Monrovia.
Last Friday, Reverend Emmanuel Nimlen, who was also the head pastor of former President George Weah's church, was jailed after his lawyer failed to secure a criminal bond. Nimlen is accused of collecting over $87,000 from 90 Liberians under the pretense of obtaining a visa to travel to Australia, a trip that did not happen. Before his imprisonment, he admitted to collecting $970 from each person for visa processing.
The program, I didn't force anybody to come. People willingly came. I told them funds are not refundable. Let the guy go. That's it. I didn't force anybody. I didn't promise anybody to come and give a visa. No, I did not. I got people who testified to that. So they made up stories to pin me black by his force. But I'm not Australian citizen. I'm not going to Australian government or immigration to say, come, I do this. No. When we go for a visa interview, they won't deny you. They go back to the Australian embassy and say, well, I'm on the back way.
To some Liberians, including Max Saturday, a businessman, Reverend Nimlen's action is a disgrace to his profession.
His attitude is unchristian because once you are a born-again Christian, and what you preach to other people, you should be an example. But instead of being an example, you are going on the contrary. So it does not show that he's a Christian. He needs to be born again. This shows that what has been happening in time past, God is revealing to us to see what has been happening in the past. Because this kind of evil thing that someone who calls himself a man of God to be involved in it is quite worrying.
Anderson Millman is the executive director of the Center for Transparency and Accountability in Liberia. He told VOA that anyone who steals from or dupes people should be held accountable.
I believe that no one should engage into deceptive conduct, especially to allegedly soliciting money from people to offer a service, reportedly working offer. Session is a forbidden act, and our laws are clear about the penalties thereof when anyone engages into such an unethical behavior or unlawful act. So he should be investigated and prosecuted, and if found guilty, held accountable for his action.
Melvin Davis, a university student, says Nimlen's action should not be taken lightly because he should set good standards as a former government official.
For his level, his position, and his closeness to the government as former government official advisor to the former president, I think he need to be prosecuted to the fullest, that other people that are close to government will not go that same route. Reverend Nimlen's action is criminal in nature and require punishment, and I think he needs to be sent to prison.
There has been no reaction from former President Weah, but an ex-official who prefers to remain anonymous agreed that Reverend Nimlen, as a former government official, should be held accountable for his actions. For VOA, I'm Denise Nipsey in Monrovia, Liberia.
Most black Americans say they have experienced racial discrimination regularly or from time to time, and that such experiences inform how they view major U.S. institutions like policing, the political system, and the media. This is according to a study from the Pew Research Center released on Monday. The Associated Press reports the study seeks to highlight black Americans' unique relationship with discrimination and the country's documented racist history against black people as possible explanations for why African Americans hold conspiratorial views about major U.S. institutions. Pew's study draw from a poll of black Americans conducted last September. The study authors said views are likely to have shifted since the respondents were surveyed. The Reverend James Lawson Jr. has died, the Associated Press says. He was 95. His family said Monday that Lawson died peacefully on Sunday. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Called Lawson the leading theorist and strategist of nonviolence in the world. Lawson and King were both 28 years old when they bonded over the ideas of Indian leader Mohandas Gandhi. Lawson schooled civil rights activists to withstand brutal treatment from white authorities. He shaped the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee to organize the sit-in movement, and he organized the sanitation workers' strike that brought King to Memphis. U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump is back on the campaign trail following his convictions in New York for falsifying business records. At rallies in the western United States, Trump focused on immigration and threatened to sanction countries, including China, if they do not stop people from leaving for the United States. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
Donald Trump returned to the presidential campaign trail last week in Arizona, where he said President Joe Biden has lost control of the U.S.-Mexican border.
It's all unsustainable. But the Biden invasion is no accident. It's a deliberate demolition of our sovereignty and of our borders. Somehow, somebody's going to explain to us why they would want this to happen. I guess it's probably votes.
There is no evidence that non-citizens are voting in significant numbers in U.S. elections. Trump was asked how he'll stop illegal migration and said he'll act against foreign governments that feed it.
If China or some other country is behaving badly, we have things called tariffs that are so severe.
The Biden administration this month moved to block asylum claims at the Mexican border when arrests for illegal crossings exceed 2,500 a day. Biden says necessary immigration reform need not come with the inflammatory remarks that Trump directs toward migrants.
While we fight for comprehensive immigration reform, he calls immigrants rapists and murderers. He says they are not people. They are not people. He says immigrants are, quote, poisoning the blood of our country. Folks, my predecessor wants a country just for some of us. We want a country for all of us.
Biden says Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric is out of line with founding American principles.
We represent how we are as a nation of immigrants, nation of dreamers, nation of freedom. And that's the America we share.
Trump's rallies last week were his first since being convicted of falsifying business records to hide so-called hush money payments he made ahead of the 2016 election. He told a rally in Nevada that his trial was the result of Biden weaponizing the judicial system while failing at the border.
This is the worst border in the history of the world. There's never been. No third world country has a border like that. And no third, I'll tell you what, no third world country has weaponization where they go after political candidates like we have either.
Associated Press polling in March showed shifting voter attitudes on immigration, with nearly a third of Americans now saying it is a major risk that immigrants will commit crimes. That's up from 19% who thought that in 2017. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
And- And that's it for this Tuesday, June 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices. Our voices. Right here on VOA